The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them city ass. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I am broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is April the 1st, 2016. There will be no April Fool's jokes played on today's broadcast, so you ain't got to worry about that. Somebody just published a very, very cruel article, April Fool's joke article, where they were talking about President Obama has signed an executive order removing cannabis from the DEA Schedule 1 list of most dangerous drugs known to mankind, which is a complete lie and does not, measure up to the science of the studies that have been done. And I'm talking about medical studies and what have you, scientific studies. And then he signed a pardon of all nonviolent drug offenders. See, that's cruel. That's a cruel joke to be playing on people. That's actually something that Ron Paul was talking about actually doing in 2008. But, you know, we got President Obama instead. So anyway, welcome to today's broadcast. We will be joined by new abolitionist Max Parthas. We are going to be talking about Donald Trump as part of one of the stories that I want to share with you today. Donald Trump was in Wisconsin last night and he expressed his support for using private prisons and does not want to legalize cannabis, showing, of course, that he has a lot in common with the Clintons, specifically Hillary Clinton. That makes Bernie Sanders the only presidential candidate calling for private prisons to be abolished in the USA, as well as the only one who said, like Ron Paul said in 2008, he would remove cannabis, most of y'all know it as weed, from the scheduled list of drugs, would get the federal government out of cannabis prohibition. So Max will be joining us to take a look at what Donald Trump had to say. Again, I'm viewing Donald Trump more and more as a distraction. A distraction to keep you from realizing that Hillary Clinton is a monster. Really. I mean, I think that he's playing a role, just coming out with some of the worst policy statements, some of the worst language that you could imagine a presidential candidate would use. And that's all the okey-doke to get you to look at Hillary Clinton being the only choice for the next CEO of USA Inc. Also, in a related story, I want to share, this is a throwback to what I was talking about yesterday or either Tuesday with President Obama. Remember, he was calling out the media. Really, he was focusing on Donald Trump, but he called out the media and saying they're not really asking people tough questions and this and that. And he was taking a dig at Donald Trump and whatnot. But we know that that is media across the board dealing with any politician, you know, especially if it's one you know, that is an establishment candidate that the corporations and the DNC and the RNC likes. They're not going to ask them any tough questions and whatnot. But anyway, Donald Trump was being asked about these questions that I was talking about earlier by MSNBC hack Chris Matthews, who is closely aligned with the Clintons. I found from research today, has done work raising money for the Clinton Foundation. And there are actually calls to suspend his cable program, Hardball, which is on, again, MSNBC, until his wife is done campaigning for Congress, because interestingly, she's getting a lot of help from people who support Hillary Clinton. I'm talking about the big money and whatnot. Kathleen Matthews is her name. Yeah, that's her name, Kathleen Matthews. And then they're also showing where people have made donations to his wife's congressional campaign, and then next day they're on Chris Matthews getting asked softball questions and what have you. So want to talk about that, because that, again, it speaks to the corrupt marriage between corporate media and politicians. And, you know, the whole purpose of Black Talk Radio Network being created, whole purpose of our nonprofit Black Talk Media Project being created, is because I realized in 2008 that we weren't really the public, that is, weren't really being given a whole lot of correct information and what have you, and a whole bunch of propaganda that was very untrue. So that's why I especially pay attention to what goes on in the media. Yesterday, check this out. I got banned from the website Daily Cost, which is supposed to be a progressive website for progressives and what have you. And I published a diary, which was really just all I did was copy and paste earlier report I had written Wednesday morning. I wrote this and then I published it as a audio track for Tanya Free and Friends, as I do weekly commentary, a little segment for them. And so I basically just posted, you know, reposted that to the Daily Cost, talking about Hillary Clinton's email problem isn't going away. I use fact-based reporting. I wasn't giving you my opinion or anything like that. And then I got, next thing I know, I got banned. And so I got, you know, I was like, wow. I'm not going to say I got angry, because, you know, I've been kicked off of white people's platforms in the past. That's why I'm on Black Talk Radio. So, you know, I wasn't really surprised about that, wasn't angry about it. But I did email them and ask them, why was I banned? And so I'll share what one of the moderators told me about my post being flagged by so-called trusted users. All of them were Hillary Clinton supporters, and saying that my post consisted of right-wing talking points, which is a familiar propaganda talking point that I'm hearing from Hillary Clinton's campaign, her people, as well as, you know, her followers and whatnot. As if you are bringing up her record or criticizing her about anything, oh, you must be a right-wing troll, you are a Republican, you are a fascist, and you're just repeating right-wing talking points and whatnot. So definitely I found that interesting, and I actually made a video documenting it, but I'm going to redo that video. I deleted it because I was like, first, before I make any assumptions, let me email them and ask why I was banned. And so they just confirmed my suspicion. So I'm going to redo that little short video documenting my experience, because apparently Daily Cost is not a website for progressive views or real news, for that matter. And you will get banned if a bunch of people, if the village idiots, get their pitchforks and flag your content. It doesn't have to be true you could be providing factual quotes and things that are undeniably the truth. That doesn't matter to Daily Cost, because they just trying to get Democrats elected. Doesn't matter what kind of Democrat, they just trying to get Democrats elected, or so I was told. And then finally, more and more news outlets are starting to publish the latest in the FBI investigation of Clinton's email arrangement, which, again, as I reported the other day, which I actually, this was what I got banned for, but a federal judge in a civil suit called her email arrangement with her server in her basement extraordinary. So now you got this Boston outlet who says that things do not look good for the former Secretary of State as the FBI prepares to interview slash interrogate her over her private basement email server she used to do government business on. So that and more is what's in store for you today on Black Talk Radio News. At any time you would like to share a comment, ask a question, what have you, please feel free to give us a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. That participant code is 549-032-pound. And then just hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You can also use the free web-based flash phone. Make a call from anywhere in the world, as long as you got a pair of headsets with a mic. And you can also give us a call on the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. So again, that's 704-951-5030. So before we ring Max and bring him on, let me just go ahead and share a little bit of this article that was published on Westword.com. That's Westword.com. Of course, always linked to the things that I share with you on this program. This was published last night it was published yesterday on Thursday. So let me just share a little bit. During his town hall meeting in Wisconsin last night, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump covered a lot of ground with MSNBC's Chris Matthews discussing immigration, the current campaign's lack of decorum, and then abortion again and again. But even with all those subjects on the table, he managed to get into Colorado's legalization of marijuana in the middle of a question about prison reform. Here is the MSNBC transcript of that Trump exchange. So the question, and Chris Matthews, he's very annoying. I really can't watch his program. I mean, he really operates like Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, in that he always interrupts a person when they're talking. The way that he asks questions is more like he's leading them. It's like, you know, it reminds me of police interrogation methods where they will say things and then get you to agree with the way they frame the question. And it's not really a question, but the way they frame it is so that, you know, they're pushing you to whatever position he wants you to have and what have you. And so, you know, I peeped his game a long time ago. I really don't like watching him at all, and I really don't watch corporate media that much at all. So, but I just wanted to share that with you as I get ready to read some of the transcript before we bring Max on. So my question for you is around prison reform. What do you see needs to be reformed with our prison system? And with that, what do you think about legalization playing into the reform? Trump said, "I think that as far as drug legalization, we talk about marijuana. In terms of medical, I think I am basically for that. I've heard some wonderful things in terms of medical. I'm watching Colorado very carefully to see what's happening out there. I'm getting some very negative reports. I'm getting some okay reports, but I'm getting some very negative reports coming out of Colorado as to what's happening, so we'll see what happens. I think a lot of people are really looking at Colorado for prison reform. I think our prison system is a disaster. It's complete disaster all over the country. Almost everything we have, Chris, if you want to know the truth, is a disaster." So then Matthews, you know, says, really goes into his nationalistic diatribe, has nothing to do with the question. Then Trump also says, other people have problems too, by the way, with prisons. Matthews. I think we're better than that. Trump, I do think we could do a lot of privatization in private prisons. It seems to work a lot better. Matthews says, what are the problems you've heard about Colorado? Because a lot of people wonder about, who do you want smoking dope? Now, what kind of damn question is that? See what I'm talking about? I mean, do you want your train conductor, the bus driver, the airplane pilot? No. What do you want? Maybe the guy who teaches philosophy might be okay. So, you know, it's everything's a damn joke to these people. This is a perfect example of what President Obama was talking about, although not in the same context, though. He says, I mean, does anybody trust anybody that's high to do anything? I mean, I'm serious about that. Well, I hear the same problem. It's not recreational drugs. What's that? I mean, I don't even want to read no more. So let's go ahead and pull Max Parthas into the conversation. Y'all bear with me as I ring him on the phone and get Max on the line.
Peace, Brother Scotty. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Sitting here doing some research on the conversation that you sent me earlier.
Yes, and you expert researcher, man, because in a little bit of time that I sent you that article I was just reading to the listeners from, you did a whole lot of research on Colorado. And so, I mean, when I first talked to you about it, you were like scratching your head. I was like, what the hell is he talking about? People watching Colorado for their prison reform. I've never heard of Colorado talking about any kind of prison reform whatsoever. So, I appreciate the research that you did and posted to Facebook. And for the listeners, I have linked to the research that Max Parthas, our resident abolitionist, has done on this very issue. So, Max, where do we start? Let's start with cannabis. All right, let's talk about cannabis legalization, and then we'll jump to prison. What's going on with the prisons in Colorado, as most of your research is focused on. But, you know, on New Abolitionist Radio with you and I and Johan and co-host and co-producer here on Black Talk Radio Network on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, one of the last stories that I had read about cannabis legalization, and they have legalized it recreationally as well as medically. The last thing I remember we reported, us reporting on, was the big tax revenue windfall Colorado was experiencing. And they, you know, had pulled in, if I'm not mistaken, hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue. I could be overstating that, but they were also talking about, you know, possibly providing tax rebates to the citizens of Colorado because of cannabis. Tax revenue was just more than they had hoped for. So, I mean, do you recall that?
Yes, I think I remember them saying something like $80 million was going towards public education of the money that they had made, or somewhere along those lines. Again, I don't have the article in front of me, but I do remember those specific conversational points that they were considering giving back some of the money to the citizenry because they had made so much.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search. Here is a article from Time.com. It was published last year, September 16, 2015. Colorado raised more tax revenue from marijuana than alcohol. Pot is a boon for tax revenues in Colorado, outpacing revenue from alcohol taxes in the fiscal year ending on June the 30th. Colorado collected almost $70 million in marijuana taxes during that time, nearly double the $42 million collected from alcohol taxes. Now, see, that wasn't even a full year, okay, at that point. So this is before the other article came out recently about about $100 million in tax revenue for cannabis. It says the sales tax underscores the sheer productivity of cannabis taxes. Mason Tevert, director of communications for the Marijuana Policy Project, told the Colorado Spring Business Journal. Marijuana taxes have been incredibly productive over the past year, so this tax holiday is a much-deserved day off, Tevert said. This will be the one day out of the year when the state won't generate significant revenue. Over the other 364 days, it will bring in tens of millions of dollars that will be reinvested in our state. So what they ended up doing was, from what I'm gathering, is they were bringing in so much revenue from taxes on cannabis sales that they even, you know, had a tax holiday where nobody paid taxes on sales tax on anything, you know, for that one day. So I don't know what the hell Donald Trump is talking about.
You know, it's difficult to make sense of a lot of these things, but that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is just simply trying to understand what's going on around me and recognize reality for what it is. I can see several aspects in here that I would point out. One with Chris Matthews in regards to talking about people being high. Contrary to popular belief, a lot of your presidents were drunks. A lot of congressmen, a lot of senators, a lot of mayors are drunks. Even their spokesperson for the GOP, their unelected spokesperson, Rush Limbaugh, is an admitted OxyContin addict. A lot of people doing a lot of things that are very important, who you trust, who are addicted to something or another, one way or another. But the criminalization of marijuana is more of a racial aspect. So when he says high, he's talking about high people of color or minorities coming in with a blunt in their mouth and dreads in their hair and playing loud music and talking about what's up and things like that. That's what they're referring to. They're pretty much just stereotyping and using marijuana as the vehicle to create this stereotype.
Right. Well, he does, again, you know, Chris Matthews tries to be slick with his propaganda and what have you. He is one of several hosts who are especially egregious with their disinformation campaigns and whatnot. But he talks about, you know, who do you want high, you know, a pilot or, you know, the train conductor and stuff like that. And, you know, we want to talk about pilots. I recall a couple of several stories related to pilots being drunk on the damn job before they enter the cockpit and what have you. So again, this is a false argument that he's using. You know, if alcohol is legal, then what's the problem with cannabis?
Well, with mainstream media, it's all about creating these narratives using fallacies. Most of what they know and talk about is really built on fallacies. So you can't expect to see anything or hear anything other than that. And, you know, I've been trying to understand Trump, too, and I think I got him a little bit pegged now after all of this time. Trump appears to be very efficient at pointing at people and saying, you do that. Like, he'll recognize that somebody has a talent, and he'll exploit that talent. He himself really doesn't know much about any issue, and we've seen that over and over again. He just generalizes and assumes. Right. Doesn't even bother to investigate to any great detail, but he can point at people and say, you're really good at what you do. Go do that. And that's what he's trying to attempt to do here, it seems like. But his perspectives when it comes to private prisoners are completely skewed and created, again, by fallacies through mass media. He's on the very shows that created his ideals right now, talking this nonsense. And using Colorado as an example was ridiculous. You know, you said I did a lot of research in a few minutes. But that's not true. I started that research on Colorado a couple of years ago. I just copied and pasted the links I saved. Colorado blew my mind with how bad it was and how criminal it was. What was going on in Colorado to where the point even the national representatives, congresspeople, and Buffy McFadden at the time had to come out and talk against privatization of prisons in Colorado. They have issues going over there where the head of the Department of Justice was murdered, and it was a manhunt looking for the head of the DOC's murderer. This is how deep and how corrupt it is in Colorado. She pointed out one community, Fremont County, where the largest employer in the entire county is, guess what? The prisons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into, because I do want to get into some of the research that you have done And but before we get into that, you mentioned earlier that you think you got Donald Trump pegged, and I would agree. And I heard a reporter actually say this the other day, but it seems like he's making it up as he goes along. Okay, there has been a study of the type of language that he uses, which isn't a bad thing, but he uses like fifth grader language to communicate to the masses. Of course, we know he uses racist, I wouldn't even call them dog whistles, but I would call them bullhorns and whatnot. But this is what I think, and I'm not the first person to say this, but I'm starting to believe it more and more, is that I believe he's in it to assist Hillary Clinton. Because I'm starting to see that this man really is he's like a Hillary Clinton, except for he's male. Okay, he's Hillary Clinton with a ding dong, so to speak. You know, because a lot of people said, like on Tanya Free and Friends show on Wednesday, she was saying, I believe he's really a liberal. You know, he's pro choice in terms of abortions and what have you. You know, he has it readily admitted. He gives money to people on both sides of the aisle. He's given a lot of money to the Clinton Foundation and what have you. And so I think that he's playing his role, that he is saying these things that are so outrageously stupid or bombastic that, you know, people are assuming Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee. And so then it'll be a clear path for Hillary Clinton. I really don't think this man wants to win. You know what I'm saying? And if he does, then, well, you know, but it'll be another Hillary Clinton. But when you look at his support for private prisons, well, we know the last administration to increase privatized prisons, it was the Clintons, you know, during Bill Clinton's administration, where so a lot of people want to talk about, you know, the Republicans want to privatize everything, and certainly, you know, the privatizing private prisons or the prisons started under Reagan. But it was really increased by the GOP, the Republican Congress, working with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, and putting all these slave catchers on the street and shifting public money to private prisons. So, you know, I think this guy is a Hillary Clinton clone or a Bill Clinton clone who's playing a role, who's actually trying to pave a clear path to the White House for Hillary Clinton. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Last week, there was an article came out where one of his lead campaign strategists left his campaign and quit and then denounced him. And she said that when she was introduced to Donald Trump, he told her, and she was told by the group that she was introduced to him by, that he was going to be a protest candidate, that his intention was to come in second, and that her goal was to get him to the position where he could come in second. Now, that right there is something I never heard of, a protest candidate running for the United States presidency. Well, I started thinking a little harder, and it dawned on me is exactly what I'd always thought it was. Each campaign, every season, throws out first a couple of what we would call sheepdogs, who will reach out for the most extreme party principles that they can imagine to see what it is people really want. So they'll ask for the most extreme thing. In this campaign, we've seen that those two sheepdogs were Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders, people are going to be upset with me for saying that, but let me explain myself. What I'm saying is he may not have thought he was a sheepdog, but you can best believe that Hillary Clinton thought he was a sheepdog and was going to use him to the best of her ability, as we see right now. Because at the end of the day, she's going to expect to gather all of you together to vote for her. So that's what we mean when I say sheepdog. Now, both of those are off the leash. Donald Trump did like Hitler did. Hitler was brought in the same way. He was supposed to be a spokesperson, and he ended up taking over the party. Now, Donald Trump's got the position where he can see the presidency in his grasp, and he does not want to do what the establishment brought him in to do, to be a sheepdog. He wants it all. Unfortunately, he happens to also be a racist, misogynist, as you said, infantile thinking person. His only talent seems to be in pointing at other people and exploiting their talents. Mm-hmm. you never hear any answers to what he's going to do or accomplish anything like that. It's usually just pointing out how bad things are and, you know, how he can save us all. And it's a very arrogant way of thinking, particularly when you say things like only I can solve in regards to bombings in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So I think he was a sheepdog that went off the leash, Scotty. And I think that the Republican Party is now trying to figure out how to put him back on the leash or back on program. And I think that Sanders is in the same boat. He's went off the leash as well. He's like, I can really do this. And it looks like they might be able to do this. And Hillary Clinton is probably losing a lot of sleep because of it.
Yeah, I will disagree with you on the terminology, and that's okay. You know, agreement's not necessary. But I don't view him as a sheepdog because he wasn't going to run until he said unless somebody progressive gets in. He was hoping Elizabeth Warren was going to get in, and when she did not, that is when he decided to run. And I think that he was like, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, and whatever happens, happens. And what have you. And I don't think that he really expected to make the political comeback in terms of the campaign that he's running and coming back, because, you know, Hillary Clinton was basically we were just waiting on Philadelphia to coronate, you know, this woman as the Democratic nominee. So, in terms of the issues that he's talking about, I'm very much for those issues the abolishing private prisons and jails, removing cannabis from the scheduled list of drugs, these trade agreements and what have you, which is really just, you know, extending slavery around the world and what have you. So in that regards, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call him a sheepdog because the DNC has been doing a lot of crooked things to suppress his campaign, but that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about Colorado's prison system. Now, most of the research that you focused on was with the prisons in terms of for domestic slaves and what have you. But Colorado also is the home of some of the GEO Group's private immigrant detention facilities, and we had reported on New Abolitionist Radio how those guys were had work stoppages and went on strike and whatnot, protesting their treatment. And, you know, so I remember that about Colorado. So, but what are some of the things that really stood out to you in your research today?
Well, the thing that stood out to me, as I said earlier, is the level of corruption that's involved in Colorado. Not only was their legislators also involved in this major corruption that's going on with the private prison industry, but also the local level was going on as well.
I know you published a story. You shared a link. I'm looking at it now about what the ACLU said about debtors' prisons. And, of course, we have been reporting on this. Happening all over the country. It's just Ferguson is America, as you named that series, you and Johanan, when y'all came up with it. So I'm looking at what did the ACLU have to say about these debtors' prisons for the poor?
Well, Scotty, at the actual moment right now, I'm having a little bit of computer issues trying to pull up the list of it. But I can generalize while I try to attempt to get this here straightened out so I can tell you about the particular incidents. As I said, there's a lot of corruption going on to the point where the head of the DOC was assassinated in his home. That's how dangerous the game being played with private prisons in Colorado is going on. As I pointed out, in some counties, it is their number one employer, these prison industries. And we're not just talking about regular prisons. Colorado is the home of the Supermax, where some of the most dangerous criminals in American history that are alive are housed at right now. So they have this going on. And at one point, there was she was the head of the prison system in Colorado, Representative Buffy McFadden. And she was totally against the GEO Group coming in with, as you said, these prisons that they're using for immigrants and more. I believe at that time they had a relationship with CCA. She swore that she would not let the GEO Group come in. But now Buffy McFadden is more involved in the prison industry itself on the privatization level. And the GEO Group is now there with these big contracts. We know also when they were decriminalizing marijuana, they were still holding people in the prisons for marijuana possession and marijuana laws.
Well, I think one of the, I may be mistaken, but it seemed like one of your articles said that they were still arresting people, you know?
Yes, that's right. Go ahead. If you want to pull any one of
them. Let me read this one about the ACLU. This comes to you from RT.com. The ACLU conducted investigations in municipal courts of Westminster, Wheat Ridge, and North Glen, Colorado, all of which are located just outside Denver, and found that each of the cities regularly hand out pay or serve warrants that lock up those who cannot foot the bill. One of the subjects was Linda Roberts, a 55-year-old grandmother who struggles with a disability and survives on food stamps. She was arrested in June of 2012, according to the ACLU, for stealing $20 worth of groceries. Upon pleading guilty, she was ordered to pay a $371 fine, which was then raised to a $746 fine when she did not pay the initial amount. Miss Roberts was arrested in October of that year and served 15 days in the county jail. She now maintains that during her stint behind bars, she appeared in front of a court and was forced to serve the duration of the 15 days unless she could pay the fine. Here is another story. Robert's story and others like it come after a number of recent ACLU investigations found similar circumstances at prisons in Ohio, Georgia, and Alabama. Yet the practice has been illegal since the 1830s, and a Supreme Court ruling from 1983 upheld that a sentencing court cannot properly revoke a defendant's probation for failure to pay a fine and make restitution. And again, you know, this is all the stuff that we report on every Wednesday night on New Abolitionist Radio, America is Ferguson. A facility, let me read this part, Max. A facility in Jefferson County, Colorado, for example, was found to be holding individuals who owed a total amount of $50, but the cost to keep them behind bars was $70 a day. Linda Roberts' time in custody cost the government $1,700. Over a five-month span, taxpayers in Jefferson County alone paid $110,000 to keep poor people in jail, according to the ACLU. So again, you know, I'm reminded that, you know, what H-Rap Brown said about those people that want to talk about law and order. As you heard me read, debtors' prisons has been outlawed. The Supreme Court in the 1980s ruled that you can't be revoking people probation for failure to pay and throwing them back in prison and what have you. But this is widespread. This isn't an anomaly we're seeing in these individual counties in Colorado. This is across the country. Isn't that what the research shows, Max?
That's exactly what the research shows, that this is not an anomaly and it happens across the country. And as that video I recently released called The Incarceration Nation in Black and White shows beyond a shadow of a doubt exactly how this is happening from state to state. These debtor laws now are sending people to prison by the thousands in these states and keeping them in there.
You know, you mentioned earlier today when I spoke to you about a New York City news report that is going to have some slave catchers who are actually using correct language to describe what they're doing, calling themselves bounty hunters and saying they are the predators and the citizens are the prey, and they're talking about the quotas. Now, from some of the research you did today, it appears that Colorado has prison quotas, and you've linked this to Correction Corporation of America in a report from Swartz Watch. What did you find there?
Again, Scotty, I'm having some issues. My computer's kind of frozen up right now, so I'm not even able to access my own research. So if you want to pull it open and read it to us, feel free, brother. But I did find that there is a quota for their prisons in Colorado, and it's a contractual quota regarding how many people they have to maintain in their prisons at all times, or else. And, you know, the or else part is the what they call the low crime tax, where the taxpayer has to pay for any empty beds that are not filled by human beings in these private prisons.
Right, such as Louisiana, where they have a contract to keep the prisons 90% full, and if you do not meet that quota of human bodies in these Correction Corporation of America private prison beds, that the taxpayer still has to pay for them.
Right, right. Like in Arizona, there are three prisons right now that have 100% guaranteed occupancy for 25 years straight.
So, again, nothing in the research that you have done is showing me that there's any kind of prison or jail reform going on in Colorado. So, again, what the hell is Donald Trump talking about?
I think he's getting his information, as I said earlier, from fallacies, from misconceptions, from stereotypes, like many people are, even in the highest offices in the land. So, you know, Donald Trump is not special in the point where he could have figured it out where Hillary Clinton apparently can, or where Bernie Sanders apparently can. I mean, they go as far as to say that it is immoral and unethical, but they won't call it slavery, which is what it is. They just can't, they refuse. It's that cognitive dissonance thing. So they get their information from what they think are reputable sources, which are, in fact, just propaganda outlets. Chris Matthews is not going to stand up there and tell you that slavery never ended. Chris Matthews is not an abolitionist. Chris Matthews, at the best, will offer you some reform and more likely some compassion for heroin users when he never gave a damn about crack users.
Okay. I found a story about them still arresting in Colorado people for possessing small amounts of cannabis. I will read this to you from usnews.com. Coloradoans voted to legalize cannabis in November of 2012, and pot-related arrests plummeted in 2013. So they're saving money right there. Despite the decline, though, more than 1,000 people were charged in Colorado last year with possession of less than 2 ounces of cannabis. Voter approval amendment 64 legalized possession of 1 ounce of cannabis effective December the 10th, 2012 for adults over age 21. Residents can legally grow 6 plants and gift 1 ounce to friends. Medical marijuana patients can possess 2 ounces. So they still continue to prosecute people over a natural herb that has a lot of value, according to the research. So that's just sad, man.
Well, one of the things that is positive about this all is that, as you see now, a lot of the news media is starting to use terminology that we helped push into the narrative here about this being modern-day slavery and human trafficking. I think you linked me one with people speaking of the Hillary Clinton camp, using those very same words, as a matter of fact. And we've seen people say it publicly now. So it's really just a matter of time before those types of confrontations of ideologies are confronted up in people like Donald Trump's face, where he has to, somebody might ask him the question, do you think this is slavery? And he'll have to start thinking and answering.
Yeah, I really don't. You know what, though, Max, and this is something I have thought about before. Donald Trump is known as a real estate mogul, right? What are the GEO Group and Correction Corporation of America listed publicly as?
Real estate.
I wonder.
You have to ask Johan in that one. That's his expertise.
Yeah. I'm just putting it out there, though. But I wonder, and I've thought about it in the past, if Donald Trump, some of his real estate properties are actually prisons. I haven't seen anything going on, and it could be the case that, you know, that's not the case. But certainly he stated last night in Wisconsin, no doubt, one of the states which Governor Scott Walker, which has, you know, he started out as a legislator, you know, pimping for the private prisons and what have you. And he continued that as governor. So it doesn't surprise me that Donald Trump was in Wisconsin talking about pushing more private prisons. I wonder how his working class and poor white supporters, those going to his rallies, those like those in the area that I live in, that are filling up these jails and what have you, I wonder how they feel about that.
Well, as far as how You know, earlier today, I was putting out a post where I was talking about how it's easy for people who enjoy white privilege to really not care about the issues of incarceration, because it's not really your family who's being incarcerated at 19 to 1 in D.C., at 10 to 1 in New Jersey, 10 to 1 in Wisconsin, at 12 to 1 in Vermont. It's not your family that's going through that. So I guess that white privilege will allow you to not see it as a primary issue or a major problem. But for us, it is. And, you know, I, from what I understand, one of the tenets of Christianity is to love your neighbor as if he or she were you. Well, you don't see us as you. There's no empathy for the plight of people who simply look different than you because of the color of their skin. And Scotty, you pointed out the research on that has been done, where it appears that white America, or white people in general, just don't have that much empathy for people who are non-white. Am I right?
Yes, studies have shown that, you know, they are programmed that way to not have empathy, but it also has an effect on black people as well, you know, being programmed to see, you know, to believe in white supremacy. But, you know, somebody asked today, this is my position, without dismissing the terrible disparities in, you know, modern day slavery and whatnot. Yes, it's true that black people are the primary targets for slavery in this country, closely followed by Hispanics disproportionately, and then Native Americans disproportionately. But white people are still getting locked up. Again, I live in this community, and I have been in that jail, and I see the local newspaper with all these white people getting arrested over drugs. The stories that we have shared about debtors' prisons, a lot of these were in rural areas, and it was white people that was getting shafted by this. But this is hidden from the mainstream media and by the mainstream media, and as long as they are led to believe it's only happening to non-white people, then, you know, they don't see it as affecting them. But it is affecting them. It most certainly is. It's just not affecting them to the same degree as it's affecting non-white people. But my position is this, Max. I don't want to end slavery because it's affecting black people. I want to end slavery because it's wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The same thing like recently, I think it was Chris Hedges said, that I don't fight fascism because I think democracy can win. I fight fascism because it's fascism. And that's the same thing with slavery. Slavery is wrong. It's like slavery because it's wrong. It has to end, period, to whoever it's happening to. But the roots of slavery is a way to oppress African-Americans in this country, and we can't ever forget that.
Right, because that's where the construct, the social-political construct of what people call white supremacy, and when in the codification, it was put into law, people, they legislated white supremacy, and they legislated that white supremacy code in the slave code. So slavery isn't a symptom of racism. Racism is a symptom of slavery.
There is a blog that was put out by a person, a non-black person by the name of Jason, I believe, out of Colorado, where he expressed some of the sentiments you just referred to about, you know, how it affects us all. And I'll just read, if you don't mind, like a quote or two from his blog, and then I'll share it with everybody as well.
Sure.
He says, and this was sent to the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, and it's regarding articles, private prisons and the CCA bid guarantee from 2012. He says, I'm appalled and just perfectly disgusted that Colorado has rendered an occupancy guarantee to a private prison contractor. I was part of a group of 480 inmates, 720 intended, used as a human bondage prepayment for financing of new construction of private prison units. Thus, I have an intimate sense of what a guaranteed occupant is. I am one of that chattel. First, we were regurgitated by the Owen administration to a temporary holding facility in Oklahoma to demonstrate that the state could produce inmates to fill new construction that Corrections Corporation of America wanted to undertake in Colorado. The third tranche of 240 inmates was canceled by Governor Ritter upon his swearing in. This truncated number of inmates was still sufficient collateral for CCA to secure financing to build units at two county facilities that can house 1,440 additional inmates. Second, when we moved from Oklahoma's human collateral chattel status back to Colorado state inmates, most of us moved into the new units that our bondage leveraged the financing for. Any bid guarantee is an act of codifying this abuse. And that's what he has. That's just some of what he has to say as a person who experienced it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before we wrap up our segment with you, Max, you mentioned earlier about changing the language and what have you. Today, I tagged you in it. I saw another article. The title of the article, it was published on HuffingtonPost.com. Check your privilege if you can afford 8 years of Hillary in the status quo. And here's a passage from that. And I was like, yay. How many past 2 weeks we've heard several mainstream mentions of calling mass incarceration exactly what it is, the continuation of slavery or to use our language, modern slavery. This is a passage from the article. Let me pull up the person's name. I want to give them credit for using this language. Tony Brasunas. This is what he wrote about African Americans. He said, if you're African American or hoping for police reform and a reduction in the mass incarceration and modern slavery system, you might not be able to afford 8 years of Hillary Clinton in the status quo. She has a private prison lobbyist running her campaign. Bernie is a forceful advocate for holding police who break the law accountable, and he promises to reduce punitive incarceration and break the prison-for-profit modern slavery system. Bro, how does it feel to see 5 years of your work in not only just on the radio program, but because of your work and how you support yourself as a spoken word artist traveling all over the country, and you have incorporated abolitionism into your poetry and when you speak to these groups, and we've been taught saying this for 5 years now, how does it feel, Max, to start seeing more and more people who have access to the mainstream platforms or get an opportunity to say something on corporate media and they call it modern slavery? How does that feel, bro?
If I had a cigar, I'd be doing an imitation saying, I love it when the plan comes together. That was part of the plan. It was the talents that we had to offer to be able to influence the minds of others through our art and our efforts and our activism. And we realized that our primary issue, as you and many others realized, was modern day slavery. So why not focus on that in the real sense? And I feel like the ancestors and those who are alive today who pushed this issue with their whole life effort forward to this culmination are smiling and saying, yes, we might see an end to this in this generation. So I feel good about that the ancestors will be proud that we're still fighting and trying to get this done. And the people who are beyond our influence, who have been doing this before us, like Lee Woods, Angela Davis, and so many others, can see that there might be an end in sight. You know how it works with truth, Scotty. First, they deny it, and then they start accepting it as commonplace. Comes a point where you can no longer deny it, and you have to call it what it is. And when we start calling it what it is, it changes how we deal with it. And that right there is extremely important.
Well, Max, before you leave us, do you got any events coming up? Again, you are a world-renowned, widely recognized for your spoken word artistry. And again, you travel to different events where you and Tribal, your wife there, do the spoken word thing, but you also talk to the people about abolitionists. You got anything coming up in the next couple of weeks that you want to tell people about, or is there anything you would like to make people aware of?
Well, absolutely. In addition to listening in to New Abolitionist Radio every Wednesday live right here on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, or just checking out the archives if you just want to find out what's going on in the world, we do have some events coming up. It's a very big one, as a matter of fact, called the 4th Annual Spoken Word Gala. in Columbia, South Carolina, and also The Session Live. I'm the founder of The Session Live, and it's been in existence now as one of the top venues in the country for the past 9, 10 years, almost going on 10 years. And we'll have that event on April 22nd in Columbia, South Carolina, featuring Sonny Patterson, one of the most incredible spoken word artists in the nation today, and an incredible activist, as well as many others. And then on the 23rd, we'll be holding the awards ceremony for many of the artists who have made an impact in our society and in our culture across the nation. They'll be gathered together all in one location. In 2014, my wife and I were recipients of the Paving the Way Award, which is a Lifetime Achievement Award. And this year, we'll be there to help bring honor to others. Tribal Rain, as you mentioned, is a very strong woman, man, after what she's been through, will be one of the features on April 22nd at The Session Live in Columbia, South Carolina. So I'll share that information. Please, if you're able, attend. We need all the support we can get, and we want to honor those who are making a difference in our world today using the talents they possess.
Well, most certainly, you know, you are one of those people that deserves to be honored for your talent in the spoken word field. But, you know, it just really, really, you should be honored for how you have incorporated abolitionism into what you do. So I appreciate you very much, you and Tribal Rain very much, man. And it has been a pleasure over these last 5 years to have worked with you and to call you an abolitionist comrade.
There would be no, everything that we've done, brother, we've done it together. You, me, Johannan, and all the people around us and all the people before and after us. Thank you for your contributions. And I'll see you on Wednesday, brother, because we're going to break it down. I think Alicia Good Soldier is coming in as a guest on Wednesday as well out of Arizona, and she'll be talking about some of the issues dealing with Arizona. So make sure you guys tune in Wednesday at 8 p.m.
All right, Max, you have a great day, and tell Tribal that we said hello.
Will do. Peace, brother.
All right, peace. All right, that was Max Parthas, spoken word artist, new abolitionist, sharing with us some of the stuff that he found out about Colorado. So there is no prison reform going on in Colorado. So again, this is just another example of Donald Trump talking out his ass and not really knowing what the hell he's talking about. All right, I'm going to take a station identification break, and then when I come back, I want to briefly go over some of the other stories that I share with you at the beginning of the broadcast. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. This program is made possible in part by your donations to the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. And stay tuned, and we'll be back on the other side.
Force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I've lost my career. I've lost financially. It's devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I'm fearful for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
Thank you. How do you describe desperation to someone who is not desperate? We have a letter to me from U.S. political prisoner Oju Mutulo, who went on to depict everyone in the management control unit at Trenton State being woken up at 1 o'clock in the morning by guards dressed in riot gear, holding doors. This country was born out of genocide. That's the political genesis of the slavery system, the political genesis of the prison system. This country was born out of genocide. That's the political genesis of the slavery system, the prison system. 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 Slavery system. This country was born out of genocide.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from the behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say USA Inc., a lot of people do not realize that the federal government of the United States ceased to be a republic in 1871 when those politicians down there in Washington, D.C. decided they were going to incorporate. So, indeed, you know, it shouldn't be surprising that you have an entity, a corporation like USA Inc. that seems to exist solely to advance the agenda of other corporations and what have you. And so that is what I'm talking about when I say I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Now, Chris Matthews, we were talking about him a little bit on there. On our segment with Max about Donald Trump, because that's who was interviewing Donald Trump, was Chris Matthews. You know, they should rename this show Softball, because that's really what it is, or they should rename it Ball of Confusion, because that's all they're trying to do is confuse people and what have you. You know, calling it Hardball. Well, again, President Obama was talking about at a some kind of conference for journalists, award ceremony or whatnot. And he took an opportunity to talk about, without naming Donald Trump, blaming the media for the rise of Donald Trump and saying, you don't really ask these tough questions of these policies and whatnot and what have you. And I would agree with him, except for I wouldn't limit it to Donald Trump. I would even apply it to Barack Obama himself. I would apply it to Hillary Clinton. It seems the only tough question she's being asked is by activists who come across her out there in the streets on the campaign trail. Just last night, yesterday, a report came out how she was very disrespectful, very angry, and all the Greenpeace activists did was ask her, will you keep your promises on fossil fuels if you are elected, considering how much money you've gotten from the fossil fuel industry? She went off, man. Hillary Clinton just went off. We have seen this time and time again, her being very dismissive of people who ask her questions. This was a white activist, Greenpeace activist, she went off on. But she went off on two other black females who were asking her about her super predator comments. And another one was asking her, I don't know the full context of that, but was asking her about stuff that was going on locally. It was a Haitian American young lady who asked her, and Hillary Clinton got real short with her. Does this woman have the temperament to become president? I don't know. I would say she does. We've had a whole bunch of vicious CEOs of USA Inc. over the decades. So But that's not what people want these days. But anyway, getting back to Chris Softball Matthews and whatnot, his wife, Kathleen Matthews, is a congressional candidate, and he is inappropriately benefiting. I mean, she is inappropriately benefiting from her husband's position, according to Republican congressional candidate Aria Shadusky. He said that he's calling on MSNBC to suspend Matthews' show while his wife, Kathleen Matthews, a Democrat, was in the race. Let me share some of this with you. On Friday, The Intercept, and they do a lot of good reporting that is not a corporate news media site, that's Green, Glenn Greenwald and other independent reporters who came together to put together their own platform. But they published a report on Friday that Kathleen Matthews has received $79,050 in campaign contributions in 2015 from prominent former and current politicians featured on her husband's show. Some of these contributions came just days before the guests appeared on Matthews' show. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand gave $10,000 to Matthews' campaign 2 days before she appeared on Harbaugh, while California Senator Barbara Boxer gave $1,000 a day before being interviewed on Harbaugh. Basic ethics and precedent dictate that MSNBC should cancel Harbaugh until Kathleen Matthews is no longer a candidate for Congress, Shadusky said. In 2003, Maria Shriver took an extended leave from NBC while her husband Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor and relinquished her position when he ultimately won. MSNBC said Matthews has not done anything wrong. Harbaugh has never booked a guest in exchange for a political contribution. A network spokesperson said that is an offensive accusation that would violate not only the standards of NBC News, but also Chris' personal ethics. Are they playing with us? Are they joking? What kind of ethic? These people don't have no damn ethics. None whatsoever. So again, this is why I keep telling people we need to be the media that we want to see. This is why the Black Talk Media Project was created. But I'm talking to everybody, not just black people. You all need to be creating localized media outlets, whether they are blogs, whether they are digital radio stations and what have you, so that you can inform the people in your community, all right, and provide them with real information, because the stuff that you're seeing on TV, it's all scripted. It is all scripted, and there is no separation between the corporate press and the U.S. government. I mean, I hear all these people talk about Iraq. Let's not, you know, and Hillary Clinton voting for Iraq and what have you to invade that country, which still has not recovered. But a lot of the U.S. media, including the New York Times, published all of this garbage. So in support of Bush pushing this stuff, I mean, come on. They really were. And yeah, they did publish Joe, I forget the guy's name, who was an ambassador and whatnot. They did publish his little op-ed. For the most part, the U.S. media it walks lock and step with the U.S. government. I mean, I have been researching media for a very long time, at least for the past 8 years. And I have come across media executives or things that they have said in the 1950s when television was starting to take off and what have you. But in the 1950s, they had no problem pushing the agenda without any investigation of the U.S. government of selling wars and what have you. Whether we're talking about the Vietnam War or any kind of military action that was going on. And I can't remember the executive's name, but he said that that is the corporate media's patriotic duty to lie. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, obviously, but to lie to the American people. Anybody who's done work on COINTELPRO or done any research on COINTELPRO, that's the counterintelligence program the FBI ran under J. Edgar Hoover to target anti-war activists who he called hippies, pot smoking hippies and what have you. And, you know, yeah. Excuse me. I think I'm getting a call. Hold on. Okay. That is all right. All right. Yeah. So, the media again, for a very long time has, you know, they do not care about providing you with the truth. Of course, you know, you're going to mix in some truth with some lies to make it believable, you know. But I have no faith in corporate media whatsoever. Any of these media personalities and whatnot, I look at them all as paid propaganda masters. That's all they do. And most of them reading from a teleprompter. And you see the shenanigans that's going on behind the scenes with Chris Matthews and his wife's political campaign. All right, so what's the next story? I need to move on. By the way, Tando Radio Show will be on air from 6 to 8 o'clock. That will be a live broadcast of Tando Radio Show. I'm not sure if Race Treaty will be on tonight. It's Friday night. They usually come on at 9 o'clock p.m. I'm still waiting to hear from them. And then the Lotus Place comes on at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on Friday night as well. So let me move on. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of being banned from the website The Daily Cost, which its Wikipedia page describes it as a progressive website for bloggers. Right now, you can join the website. Anybody can join the website, and then you could comment on stuff that's been posted, or you could write your own stuff, which is called a diary or whatnot. So yesterday, y'all probably heard me on prior programs this week saying it's been 2 days, it's been 3 days, we're still not hearing anything from corporate media about the new revelations in Hillary Clinton's self-inflicted email scandal. We're just not hearing anything. So I went to Daily Cost and I just reposted what I had written up for my Black Talk Radio weekly commentary, and I titled it Clinton's Email Problem Not Going Away. All right. Now, I was banned for publishing this article, all right? And I already pulled up what I wrote. I pulled up the article, which I linked to, but I'm also pulling up the reply. And I'm going to share everything with you. But first, bear with me as I read this article that I published. It's very short. It wasn't very long. You know, I'm trying to get in the habit of not trying to bury people under an avalanche of words and whatnot, and just get to the point, man. Just get to the point, get to the facts, share the facts. That's all that's important, and just share it. So it's not very long. So I published this on Thursday at around 1:15. Clinton's email problem not going away. Thanks to Hillary Clinton's decision-making, we won't stop hearing about her emails anytime soon. While it is doubtful that her competitor, Senator Bernie Sanders, will bring it up in the next scheduled Democratic debate, the email scandal continues to be a huge problem for her campaign. According to press reports, a second federal judge has taken a rare step in allowing a group suing for State Department records to seek sworn testimony from officials, saying there was, quote, evidence of government wrongdoing and bad faith. Judge Royce Lambert's order described Clinton's email arrangement as extraordinary, quote unquote, and undercuts her assertion that she was allowed to set up a private email server in her private residence that other State Department officials were unaware of until it was brought out in the Benghazi congressional hearings. Referring to the State Department, Clinton and Clinton's aides, Lambert said there had been constantly shifting admissions by the government and the former government officials, and where there is evidence of government wrongdoing and bad faith, as here, limited discovery is appropriate, even though it is exceedingly rare in FOIA cases. That's Freedom of Information Act, FOIA. It is important to remember that aside from the civil lawsuits, Clinton is not just being investigated for mishandling official government emails, but she is also being investigated over whether she provided favorable treatment to foreign governments and corporate entities doing business through the State Department in exchange for large multi-million dollar donations to the Clinton Foundation run by her husband, Bill Clinton, and daughter, Chelsea. Even if Clinton is indicted, critics are doubtful she will spend any time in that private prison that provided her with plenty of campaign cash during her last two runs for president. So I didn't share any opinions except for people's opinions that even if she is indicted, she will never spend one day in a private prison, you know, since she's gotten so much campaign cash from. These are all factual statements. The bulk of it is just focusing on the recent civil court hearing in the order of this federal judge, Royce Lamberth. And for publishing this, I was banned. Okay. People start making comments. Oh, this is just a right-wing troll spewing right-wing talking points. And then others, they're trying to gather together a lynch mob. Let's get him banned and let's keep flat. They're saying this in the comments. So I was like thinking, well, what the hell do they got? Because people were saying, bye bye, Scotty, bye bye, and all this and that. And I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? What I do? You know, what did I do wrong? Did I violate some kind of rule? Is there some kind of rule or something that says no articles critical or reporting on Hillary Clinton's email problem or something? So anyway, I asked for an explanation. This is what I wrote. I used the headline, Clinton's email problem is not going away. That is the headline to my recent diary entry. And the next thing I know, I cannot comment on any articles or do anything but read. In the comment section of my article, which, by the way, contains quotes from sources easily looked up and published in other news outlets, but some of the commentators suggested I violated some kind of rule. So my question is, what kind of rule did I violate? And why is my use of the site limited? Regardless of what commentators are saying, I am not a Republican troll. I am an unaffiliated progressive voter. I am also a black man who runs the North Carolina nonprofit Black Talk Media Project and the founder of the podcasting and digital radio broadcasting network, Black Talk Radio Network. I have been in this business and writing articles since 2008, and I take my writing and all my other media operations very serious. Please explain what is going on so I have a clear understanding of this issue before I make the wrong assumptions. So first they come back with a little snide-ass remark talking about, go ahead and make the wrong assumptions. It's more fun that way. So this is all a damn joke. From Eyes Bright, this is the moniker of the moderator who answered my question on the Daily Cost, which, you know, advertises itself as a progressive blog, but that ain't what he says. He says, your diary received 13 flags from trusted users here. That was more than sufficient to get you banned. Here's the thing. Daily Cost is very specifically a Democratic blog, founded specifically to elect more and better Democrats. What you posted in your diary consisted of right-wing talking points and insults against the leading Democratic candidate, all of which have been repeated in the right-wing blogosphere ad infinitum. There's a big wide internet out there, and you can find a place where your Hillary hatred and right-wing talking points will be welcome. This is not that place. So I'm not even going to read what my response, but I basically told him, thank you for confirming my suspicions. Obviously, you have a bunch of biased Hillary Clinton supporters over there who flagged me while I had other people who was sharing the post and also saying, you know, explaining what I was writing and how it was indeed factual. And then other people recommended my post. So obviously the staff over there at Daily Cost isn't really interested in electing quote unquote better Democrats, because I mean, what's a better Democrat? Okay, unless that's, you know, that's meaning that there are some Democrats that, hell, they just ain't no good. They don't line up with our policy. But again, now it's all of a sudden a Democratic blog and not a progressive blog, because one of the things I hear from these Hillary supporters is that Bernie is an independent. Doesn't matter that he's caucused with Democrats his entire career in Congress and in the Senate, that he's really an independent. He's really not a Democrat. And Hillary's a Democrat. So now I'm being told it's a Democratic blog. All right. It's not a progressive blog anymore, as stated in their Wikipedia page. It's a Democratic blog solely, you know, set up to elect Democrats. And if people don't like what you have to say about something, and I never engaged in any kind of name calling. I didn't call Hillary. Oh, I just did. But I didn't call Hillary out her name. It was a news-based article. It was a factually-based article. All right? And I got banned for that. You know, well, he is correct. It is a big, wide internet out here. And, you know, I've been running the Black Talk Radio Network platform since 2008. For the very same reason, white people silencing my voice, don't like what I say on the airways. That's, you know, for people that have been following my work for a number of years, I started off in digital radio in 2007 on that other network called Blog Talk Radio. They didn't like the fact that I created a program called Black Talk Radio and that I was talking about issues important to black people in uncompromising language. Next thing you know, I get banned. I get kicked off. They shut me down for a week, said I'm on punishment, I'm in timeout or whatnot. And when I ask why, you know, the dude gonna tell me, well, people are offended by the name Black Talk Radio. And when I go to your website, you got red, black, and green. What's that about? You know? So they took my voice away. And then that's not a good feeling, people, when people take your voice away. I don't care about the daily costs. Like I stated, I've been running this platform since 2008. So I don't care about publishing on the daily costs, okay? But it still does not feel good when people silence you. And so, you know, this is just more of the same. White people, and these are apparently liberals, who don't like black people going off the reservation or who don't fall in line with their agenda. So that was just interesting that occurred. Not surprising whatsoever. But the Daily Cost apparently is a website for Hillary Clinton, for Hillary Clinton's supporters and what have you. And, you know, they don't really care about the truth. All they care about is seeing this monster get elected. So the last thing that I want to share with you before I close out the broadcast, more and more news outlets, as I stated, are publishing the latest in the FBI investigation of Clinton's email arrangement called Extraordinary by a federal judge. Let's pull up this BostonHerald.com article. I have linked to it for those that want to check it out. This article was written by Bob McGovern on Friday, today, April the 1st. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton will have to be on her toes when she is finally grilled by federal prosecutors and the FBI about her email scandal, because she could end up facing perjury and contempt charges if she missteps and gives the wrong answer. FBI agents are reportedly nearing the end of their investigation into her use of an unauthorized email server, and that means the former Secretary of State could soon be on a short list of people to interview. If and when she is brought into a room to go face-to-face with prosecutors, her attorney will have one question that will set the tone for the rest of the meeting. Will these questions relate to a criminal investigation? That's when Clinton will find out what type of defense she'll have to play. If she's being asked questions about her conduct potentially being criminal, then she could plead the fifth, said Laura Coates, a former federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C. It wouldn't be the most politically savvy move, but as far as her criminal justice rights and her constitutional rights, you're absolutely allowed to do so. But pleading the Fifth Amendment to avoid self-incrimination is not a catch-all defense. If federal agents ask her whether the national security agent told one of her staffers about the dangers of using an unsecured BlackBerry, what can she say? If she denies it, and a recent Washington Post story indicating otherwise is true, she perjures herself. If she admits it, that will likely give prosecutors extra ammo for an indictment. If Clinton pleads the fifth, investigators can continue with questioning, but they can later have a judge determine whether she has a right not to answer. Please go on and read the rest of this article. I'm not going to read the entire article. But this is serious. This is not something, as Hillary's people would have you believe, it's something that's just going to blow over. Now, whether or not she actually gets indicted, considering how the Justice Department is politicized, it's a wing of the executive branch, and if President Obama, as chief executive officer, tells the top cop, U.S. Attorney Loretta Lynch, no, we don't want to indict Hillary. That'll destroy the Democratic Party or some other nonsense or whatnot. Well, Loretta Lynch may move not to indict. If Loretta Lynch thinks that Hillary Clinton will indeed become the next president or whatnot, well, maybe, you know, she doesn't indict with hopes that if Hillary becomes president, Hillary will reappoint her to that position, you know, butter biscuits and all and what have you. So, you know, but this is very serious. This is still very serious. Look, you don't spend these kind of resources. You don't give people immunity. The person who set up the server in her basement, you don't give them immunity if this was just some civil, you know, case or something like that. You give immunity in criminal proceedings. And so, you know, people can talk all they want to about, oh, she's not being investigated, this isn't a criminal investigation. Try that lie on somebody else that don't know no better, okay? I don't know what kind of world you think I live in, but apparently it ain't the same one you live in. So, you know, this is starting to heat up, and people expect that either Hillary Clinton and or her aides will be subpoenaed for, well, maybe not subpoenaed, but brought in for interviews with the FBI. Now, I don't like the fact that I'm hearing that the FBI director, James Comey, is supposed to be interviewing Hillary Clinton himself. I just think that it's not a smart move. Could be, you know, the fix is in again. I don't know. But he should let the regular investigators handle this or whatnot. Why does he want to interview her or whatnot? I'd rather one of these FBI agents that's gung-ho about doing their job, and I would want them to interview her. But, you know, I'm kind of suspicious and looking at Comey, you know, side-eyed if these reports are true that he's going to do the interview personally himself as the FBI director. And even if I've been reading again, you know, this is all speculation and whatnot based on what people are hearing from leaks pertaining to the investigation. But even if the Justice Department doesn't indict her, that people who have knowledge of what they have uncovered will be very pissed off, and they will leak it to the media. And, you know, that could blow up in Obama's face and Attorney General Loretta Lynch's face, effectively kill any kind of credibility she might have had as a prosecutor moving forward as the top law enforcement officer in the United States and what have you. So, yeah, we'll see if the reports are true. If within the next couple of days, if Hillary Clinton will be sitting down with the FBI to answer questions. All right. Well, that's the end of my program. I want to thank New Abolitionist, Spoken Word Artist, Black Talk Radio Network broadcaster, Max Parthas, for joining us today and sharing his research on Colorado and trying to help us make sense of the nonsense, which didn't make no sense, from Donald Trump on cannabis legalization or prison reform in Colorado, man. I don't know who he's hearing stuff from, but he's getting a lot of wrong information and what have you, and he's probably just making it up anyway. I think he is making it up as he goes along, you know. So let me see. Today is Friday, so I won't be back on air till Monday. So over the weekend, make sure that y'all are moving in silence behind these enemy lines, meaning be codified, develop that battlefield situational awareness, don't become a casualty out here behind these enemy lines. Definitely don't make it easy for them. No drinking and driving, no smoking weed and driving, no speeding, wear your seat belts, all this and that. Come to a full stop at a stop sign and a stoplight. Don't go blowing through or doing a rolling stop or what have you. Even if you don't go to prison, they're going to haul you down there, give you a ticket and a fine. And, you know, I'm sure that your family can use that money on better things than filling the coffers of, you know, these people practicing 21st century slavery and human trafficking. With that said, peace and blessings to all. Remember, Tando Radio Show live broadcast coming up at 6 o'clock. Peace and blessings.
We also recognize that individuals do not create rebellions. Conditions do. Until they begin to address themselves to those conditions, rebellions will continue and they will escalate. They will escalate.